everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and critique films all in one big long take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Okay. All right. What's up?
Well, you know, same old, same old.
Yeah, we are breaking down a movie today that is currently bombing hard in the global box office, which is a bummer.
It's a big bummer.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, this movie had kind of a viral moment on TikTok and social media, where at least in the United States, where American people were making videos kind of going, who is this? Who is Robbie Williams? And why is there a movie about him? And why is he a monkey? And and I will be completely honest, I made my own viral video on TikTok
about this.
I made a video making fun of this movie as well. And then I went and saw it because I was intrigued. All these people in my comments were like, you got to at least watch the Rock DJ music video. And I was like, okay, fine. So I watched that music video, and it was like one of the craziest music videos I've ever seen. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, where he pulls off his skin?
Yeah. Where he rips his skin off of his body.
It's a crazy, weird music video.
And look, like, we were born in the late 80s. I know who Robbie Williams is. I wasn't one of the people who was like, I have no idea who this is. Like, from the moment I first saw a trailer for Better Man, I was like, I do know who Robbie Williams is. But I still was like, is Robbie Williams a big enough star that we should be making a biopic about him?
Yeah.
And it sort of felt like if somebody was like, yeah, there's a Lance Bass biopic coming out, I'd be like, okay, oh, why? Okay. Yeah. And he's a dolphin in it. What?
Bass is a dolphin.
Yeah.
Coming in 2025. No.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so I knew who, first of all, I loved Robbie Williams.
You had a Robbie Williams phase.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And I've always really liked his stuff. Whenever, like, I wouldn't go search him out.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like, I feel like I talked about him a lot to you and all of our other friends. So you remember that.
Okay. I do remember that.
I bought his CD. It's The Ego Has Landed, and it had a bunch of his, it had a lot of this. I listened to it the other night, and it was just total nostalgia. Like, wow. And all of his songs are actually really good, but he's never, ever been big in the US. He's had his one song, Angels. It topped at like 57 on the US charts. And that's the biggest song that he's had. So I get where people are coming from, because I also thought of that, like, how's that going to do in America? Like, he's not big, and obviously it's not catching on, but it should catch on.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know who he is doesn't mean that it's not a good movie. It's actually an incredibly good movie, surprisingly.
It's shockingly good. And I've been telling that to everyone that someone, I went and saw the Robbie Williams monkey movie, they go, oh, how was that? And I go, it's actually so good.
It's like surprisingly amazing. I went and saw it with my wife. I was like, hey, we should go see this movie together. And she's like, well, what is it? And I said, well, it's Better Man. It's about this guy, Robbie Williams. He's like a singer, but he's a monkey. And she gave me this look that was like, seriously? Like, we're gonna, why? Like, and I was like, just trust me. Like, Austin loved it, because you said that you were surprised that you liked it. And I was like, I love the trailer. I know who Robbie Williams is. I loved it when I was younger. And she's like, okay. So I showed her the trailer, and she's like, that looks interesting, but I don't know. And she's like, totally skeptical until the movie started. And then as it went on, like, she was totally in. So me and her both like loved this movie. She was totally skeptical, but she, like, once you get past, I understand it's a little strange to see that he's a monkey, but it makes sense within the context of the movie. And it actually is a pretty brilliant idea to give a new spin on the biopic genre, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, first of all, I guess we have to have this conversation. So you say biopic?
Biopic. Sorry. Did I say, I said biopic, but I think it's biopic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, well, you know, people get really uptight about this. People get really, and I, like, the thing is people will be like, it's biographical picture, so it's biopic. And I'm like, but also biography, So I can see both. I can see people saying biopic or because biography has a what is that, a long O sound or a
biography or
a short O sound? I don't know. Yeah.
When I first saw that, I remember thinking biopic, like a biography, biopic or biography epic. I don't know. That's just what, for some reason, that was in my head. But yeah, everybody's like, it's biopic. And I'm like, oh, well, what have you?
I think that discussion is so pedantic and so annoying because people get really, really mad about it if they feel like you don't pronounce it correctly. And it's like, there are enough people who pronounce it both ways that I think you could say it's colloquially pronounced both ways.
Right.
And it's okay. Right. It's not like a thing like et cetera, where it's like, you are just saying that word wrong. You're putting, you're putting the C where a T goes instead of, et, you know, but, or like especially, you know, it's like, it's, but I
or think Reese's.
Yeah,
Reese's people. It's Reese's pieces, not Reese's pieces. Anyway, so I don't know.
I actually will. I will stand.
I will fight people on that one too.
Yeah, I'll stand on business when it comes to Reese's pieces.
Yes.
Like, too. What are you doing? What?
Speak English, please.
You're a child. You're a child. Okay.
You are a child. You
it is a rand.
Speak correctly.
It is a man named Reese. And this is a piece of his candy. Okay?
Reese's. They are Reese's pieces. There's his.
Of peanut butter chocolate candy.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, but I think biopic and biopic, I get both. I get the.
Yeah, I get both.
I
don't really care.
Yeah, and I don't really care. But this is a genre of film that I think we see so much of that every time you see a trailer for a new one, you kind of go like, even if you really like the person, like I love Bob Dylan is one of my all-time favorite.
That's what I was gonna say,
and it's like, even when I saw the trailer for A Complete Unknown, it's like, okay, like I guess I'll go see that. I did really like that movie. We talked about that in our 2024 film recap. But this was definitely one where I saw the trailer and I definitely went, well, there's something there, they're doing something with this. But I also thought, I already am kind of tired of biopics and I don't really care about Robbie Williams. What are, you know? And so I get why the movie's not really becoming a huge, massive, sensational hit. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't intrigued from the first time I saw a trailer.
Yeah, the first time I saw a trailer, first of all, I was blown away because it actually is a really well-made trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, I cut trailers, promos. That's what I do for a living. So I try to pay attention to those things. So the trailer was really, really good. The thing, and I knew Robbie Williams, so I was interested, but the thing that really is kind of frustrating is that the marketing for this movie was not done very well. Like, I get people being hesitant about it and I get people kind of like, ooh, I don't know. Why is he a monkey? Like it makes sense, but there was like one trailer and it didn't come out that far in advance of the movie. And then they really didn't do much on social media. Like they released they released the one song, right? Like the dance.
Yeah.
But I don't think they did that much. And I think the I've been thinking about it and I wonder if it's because it was released by Paramount and Paramount, it was just acquired by Skydance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if this kind of suffered from everyone being worried about being bought out by another company, right?
Definitely possible.
It's very possible, but I feel like they just kind of neglected the marketing of this movie, or they didn't think it could have legs. And but then again, I don't know why you'd spend over $100 million on a movie and not try to sell it.
I mean, that's how I felt being a part of the Horizon films. It was like why are we all this money went into making the movie? How come? But obviously, most of that money was raised independently and the studio didn't actually fund it. They were just distributing it. So, but a movie like this, they were paying and you can see it. It's on the screen. I mean, the movie looks incredible.
It does.
And the money that they spent is definitely on the screen. Yeah. It is weird that they wouldn't try to make a bigger push of this. I think probably the biggest thing that's going against this film is just the thing of the American market going, we don't know who this is. What is this? And being so confused by it. And I even saw a lot of people who thought that the online trend of saying who is Robbie Williams was part of the, was like a viral marketing attempt.
Yeah.
It was an attempt to get people talking about the film. For as far as I'm concerned, like I have a video that's over a million views that is about this. And I and nobody approached me to make that video. Nobody from Paramount came and said, will you make a video? Like, I think that actually happened organically. I think that American people just thought it was funny that there's this massive movie about this apparently huge pop star that most Americans have never even heard of. And and I think that that so but I don't think that that translated into ticket sales. I think it translated into people just kind of viewing the movie as kind of a joke and like not really taking it seriously.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But give it a chance. Like, it's the thing. Like, this movie will surprise you. Because, and we'll talk about it now. We're going to talk about some spoilers. We probably won't go through the entire movie, but we are going to talk about spoilers. So, spoiler warning.
Absolutely.
But this movie there's a few things that it has going for it. It, just like we talked about, it kind of takes the biopic and kind of changes it because he's a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also,
I want to say too, a lot of people have asked me in my comments, like, because I've made videos since and said, by the way, I saw the movie and it's great.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in my comments have said, but why is he a monkey? And it's like it's not actually a terribly complex concept. No. And also it's amazing how quickly you get over it.
Like,
you're 5 minutes into the movie and you're like, cool, this is what we're doing. And you just accept it, and then you just start watching the story.
Yep.
And there are several reasons conceptually why he's a monkey, but they're not terribly deep. They're pretty like surface level, but they work conceptually, and that's all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, and I mean, he even says it in the trailer. He says, like, I've always thought of myself as less evolved.
Right.
So he is the main reason, at least I took from it, is that is how he views himself. He views himself as a monkey. He views himself as something less than human or less than everybody else. Right.
Yeah. And I think that there's a few different, there's the thing about being less evolved. He talks in the movie about late in the movie, there's a scene of him in rehab where he says, you know, people say that the age that you become famous, you stop developing.
Yes. You're stunted.
You're stunted. Yeah. And I became famous at 15 years old. So I'm stuck there and I'm less evolved. I'm not as evolved as most adults. And there's that element of being under-evolved. And there's also this element, I think, of him seeing himself as this like dancing, performing circus.
Yes.
Man.
Yeah.
And so there's a few different, like,
there are some layers to it for sure.
And then there's also this element of him not really relating to the way that other people see him, that they see him as this sex symbol, as this like this guy that's on red carpets and on magazine covers, but he sees himself as this kind of ugly other. So there's these several different kind of psychological layers to why he would be presented as an animal, and they all, for my money, work very well. And again, it's not like I spend most of the movie going, what's the deal here? Why is he a monkey? It's pretty apparent in the way that they're presenting the story. And the motion capture work is fantastic. And
So it's great. It's just, I mean, I felt it was as good as any of the Planet of the Apes movies that have come out, you know?
Yeah.
It's really well done. But I actually, that's the other thing that I love too, and that I noticed throughout the movie, the reason he's a monkey becomes more and more layered and more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives it takes on new meaning throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And I did also think, like, he's a monkey. I mean, that's a common phrase for people, you know, who are feel like, I mean, I think about Zoolander.
Sure.
Right? And he's like, you're a monkey, Derek. Dance, monkey, dance. Right?
Yeah.
Like that. But that's Oswald. Kind of. Yeah, exactly. Patton Oswalt did that.
Mm-hmm.
And he, that's what I thought, but I thought, that's a term that people will use. Like, I feel like a monkey, and so it all kind of goes into it. And it actually is surprisingly effective throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, there is. So we're kind of coming at this from two different perspectives, because you are a person who was a genuine fan of Robbie Williams. You had at least one of his albums growing up. You knew the songs, at least some of them.
Yeah.
I'm a person who knew of Robbie Williams, who definitely was tangentially aware, who I'd heard the song Angels, and I knew, and I had friends who were fans of his. But my perspective on this film, the thing that is interesting to me when it pertains to the genre of biopics is that I don't feel like our protagonist is, or the film itself is talking about like one of the all-time great musical savants of our time.
Yes.
When you watch a movie like, because a lot of people compare this film to Rocket Man because this movie is a musical and Rocket Man's a musical. Obviously biopics always have music in them, but they're not always like presented like a musical wherein, you know, characters start singing in the middle of scenes and they do dance numbers like they're in an actual musical. It's not just a lot of biopics. The only time they sing is if they're recording a song in the studio or they're performing in front of an audience. In this movie and in Rocket Man, they have actual musical sequences where they sing songs in real life. And but the thing about like Rocket Man or Bohemian Rhapsody or a lot of movies in this genre, you know, Respect, the Aretha Franklin movie, is they're trying to craft this narrative about the musical genius of this person.
Yeah.
This person just had, they understood something about music and about the form that no one else did, that they had, there was something about their showmanship, something about their voice, something about their talent. And what's interesting to me about Better Man is Robbie Williams as our narrator and protagonist never really seems to believe in himself as that.
Yes.
He's telling a story where he's like, look, I get it. I'm as confused as anyone as to how I got here. I don't know why or how I became one of the most famous pop stars in the world. It's a crazy story, but it did happen to me. And I've been trying really hard my whole life to earn it and to like figure it out. But that's what was so relatable and kind of amazing to me, is that it was a story about like a deeply insecure performer who from the beginning of his story is kind of falling haphazardly into situations. He's sort of like barely scraping by and barely making it, and like he's not walking into audition rooms and blowing people out of the water. He's walking in and like kind of falling flat on his face, and then he'll kind of save it with a little cheeky remark. And a lot of people in the UK, they talk about that, like the nature of Robbie Williams' fame is it's always been more about charisma than it has about talent. It's been more about his personality.
Yeah. He's an entertainer more than he is like a great singer. He is actually a really good singer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not, he actually has a very distinct voice, which I think has helped him, but he's, and he says it like in the very end of the movie, he talks about, you know, I'm an entertainer. Like that's what I do. And I'm not, I can't remember exactly what he says. I wish I could remember exactly what he says, but he sums it up as basically like he has accepted the fact that he is an entertainer. He sings songs that he likes, but he also sings other people's songs. And that's just like what he's done. And that's what he's accepted. And it is nice to kind of have that, like, you know, it's, he's not the best musical talent in the world. And he says so himself, but like, I think the other thing that really makes this movie really good is the fact that it's structured so well.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so much about, you know, his inner acceptance of himself.
Right.
Like that's what the entire movie is about.
Yeah.
And I mean, it has all these really great stories in it, and they focus the people, the characters that they focus on in his life are really, you know, they play a big part in his life. But I mean, it first starts out, you kind of think it's going to be about his dad because he has a really troubled relationship with his dad. And they have this great prologue about him kind of like, you know, his dad was obsessed with celebrity and obsessed with like the Rat Pack and kind of taught him how to sing, but then his dad left him. And so you kind of think it's going to be about that. And it is, but then he, you know, he has his grandma who helps him a ton, and his mother who was there for him. And then he has his fiance who was really there, and all these stories kind of come together and you think it's going to be about something, but then it ultimately ends up being about him having to accept who he is and accept being what he is.
His whole life, he's been trying to perform a different identity to become what he thinks the audience wants of him, or even down to like his name. His name was Robert Williams. He went by Robert, and the first guy that managed him when he was in the boy band Take That. Is that what it's called? Take That.
Take That. Yeah.
Take That. Told him your name's going to be Robbie from now on.
Yeah.
And obviously he was just like, hey, you know more about the business than me. I'll be Robbie. I'll be whoever I need to be.
Yeah.
To be successful. And that was kind of the story of his career, was like, who do I need to be? What do I need to be to make my dad think I'm successful, to make people in the audience like me? And the whole movie, you're right, is about the people that he, like there's a great scene. I think in so many biopics about famous musicians, it's like they show up to the studio to record a song and they start playing a song that they wrote, and everyone in the room's like,
yeah.
And there's that moment where everyone's like, whoa, who is this guy? Like, what? I can't. And there's so many moments in this movie that are so great where, like, you think it's going to be that moment. Like, there's a moment when he's in Take That where he finally gets to sing a lead vocal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's kind of a backup singer and a backup dancer. He's kind of like a Lance Bass in Take That. Like, he's sort of a background guy. And he finally gets the opportunity to sing a lead vocal. And you think this is going to be one of those moments where they go, whoa, Robbie's the star. Robbie's actually been the star all along. And he falls flat on his face. He has a total meltdown in the studio. He like can't do it. They have to have another guy step in for him. He just is like kind of a nervous wreck who kind of can't get out of his own way. He's got a terrible addiction problem. And then there's another moment that I really like where he, later on in his career, he gets teamed up with a songwriting partner who's going to help him try to develop some songs. And he comes in and he's like, he's got all these lyrics written down and he's trying to be like this cool, you know, English rapper kind of guy.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, hey, dude, I don't know what you're doing, but like, can you just do something that's a little bit more genuine? Is there anything that you have to say that's a little more honest? And he's like, well, sometimes I write things that I'm kind of embarrassed about, but like, and he's like, well, sing me one of those. And it's like, and it's still not like he sings it and the guy goes, wow, that's a hit song.
Yeah.
He sings it and the guy goes, okay, there, we can work with that.
Yeah.
And then together they build it into something that's like, this actually might not be terrible.
Yeah.
And I think that's so much more honest and relatable than just this guy who's like, wow, everyone that came across this guy was like, whoa, what a generational talent.
Yeah.
It's like more often than not, Robbie's kind of screwing up and getting in his own way.
Yeah.
And
that whole scene with, I forget his name, the actual guy, but this his new song partner.
Yeah.
He tells him, you know, you can't, you know, songs only mean something if what does he say? Songs are only worth something if it costs you something.
Yeah.
Or songs are only valuable if it costs you something. And, you know, I loved that line. And I love the fact that it was just kind of like, okay, this isn't great, but we can work with it. Just like you said. And then after that part, he's not his song that they write, they sing it in a musical portion. Mm-hmm. But then that song doesn't even become a hit. He has to work his way up. Like who is it? He sings somebody else's song. It's a thousand, you know, the.
What is it? What song?
Land of a Thousand Dances. I think that's what it's called. But he sings, so he has to.
Do the alligator. He's
got
to sing covers. Yeah.
And he's like, why am I doing this? I should sing my own stuff. And even the other guy's like, yeah, why would? And the guy's like, listen, you got to get people interested.
Yeah.
And so he has to do other people's stuff before he even gets famous enough to do his own stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a different take on it. And it was really nice. I mean, it was, like you said, it was a little more genuine. Like,
another thing, I'm curious how this landed for you as a fan of the music. This is another thing that I really love about this movie, but I could see maybe fans being like, oh man, I don't like how often they're doing that.
Yeah.
So it's not that Better Man doesn't have formulaic beats that it's hitting.
Yes.
Like you said, it's structured really well, but the structure is familiar. It's like,
we
start with him as a kid. We establish this relationship with his dad. He wants to be famous. We flash forward to him as a teenager auditioning for Take That. We go through the boy band years. Yep. He gets addicted to drugs. He has this kind of falling out with that. We follow these sort of familiar beats.
Yeah.
But one thing that this movie does again, that so many other biopics don't do, is like, there's always these moments in biopics where There's like these iconic performances,
yeah,
like the, like these performances that are sort of enshrined in the history of yeah. who this, you know, if it's Walk the Line, then it's Johnny Cash playing at Folsom Prison, or,
right.
you know, the first time that he sings on stage with June Carter. If it's Elvis, it's, you know, the show that he was on?
Where he dances and he did the Ed Sullivan show.
The Ed Sullivan show. Yeah, and it's, you know, there's. Yeah, if it's Bohemian Rhapsody, it's Live Aid.
Right.
And the way that they portray these performances in most movies is it is this transcendent culture-breaking moment.
It's usually moment, the climax.
Yeah, or it's a moment that you can feel every character who's there to witness it knows they're witnessing history, knows they're witnessing something amazing. In Better Man, we have something that I don't know if I've ever seen before. In almost every single iconic Robbie Williams performance, the performance is undercut by Robbie's anxiety. Yes. We go into his brain and we see what he's seeing inside of the performance. And what he's always seeing are like specters of himself in the audience that hate him, that are looking at him with vitriol. And it always interrupts the performance and undercuts the moment. And what we see is his terror, his fear that the audience is going to find him out and find out that he's a fraud. And
it's himself. In different parts of the movie. So it's himself watching himself as if he hates himself.
Him as a kid or him as a teenager in the audience watching himself with a lot of anger. Yeah. And I could see maybe how like big fans of his would be like, oh man, I kind of just want to watch that moment, that performance. But I thought that was kind of amazing and kind of, what did you think about that as a
fan? I loved it because I mean, it served the story.
Yeah.
Like it served the whole narrative of how he feels himself. So like I think it is funny because I bumped on it a little bit at the beginning. Like, I just want to hear the song. But then as it went on, you start going, well, God, when is he going to get over this? When is he going to accept himself? Right. Because like the whole movie is very impressionistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously since it's a musical and it works really, really well. So maybe the first couple times I was a little bit like, it'd be nice to hear this. But then as it goes on, you're like, okay, when is he going? It started to serve the narrative really, really well, because you start going, when is he going to just stop worrying so much about himself? You keep thinking these images in the stands are just going to go away and he's going to get it.
Yeah.
Then he doesn't. And going again, like he plays Nebworth, which I didn't know what Nebworth was, but it's in England. And it was like, how many, 120,000 people?
125,000 people came to Nebworth, which is crazy.
Anybody who plays to 125,000 people is pretty big no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Right. So he's obviously a lot bigger in England, but he this is kind of the show that it seems like he was known for, right? Like the Live Aid for Queen and all those other places. And the thing that they do in this scene, instead of making it the climax, they really make it kind of like his lowest point.
Yeah.
Like he's just come out of a bender. He's like laying upside down and he's like barely with it. And then he starts performing and he's performing really, really well. And it's really fun. But then he like sees all of his manifestations of his, you know, anxieties in the crowd, all these different versions of himself. And then he jumps in the crowd and he starts murdering them.
Yeah.
Like he has this whole fight scene set to Let Me Entertain You.
I have to applaud this film for its originality, for its visual style and panache and its boldness, because again, like you said, this should be the climactic performance of the movie where he finally accepts himself, where he goes, you know, if you're an outsider looking in, you think the height of Robbie Williams' career is that Nebworth performance. And I think even Robbie Williams in interviews has said, like, that's the biggest show I ever played. It's the biggest show I ever will play. If you actually watch live clips of the Nebworth show, there's just full moments where he just stands on stage, just looking at the audience like, I don't know. I can't believe this, you know? And I'm sure it was a really amazing experience for him. But I think it's brilliant that the movie treats this as like this battle with his demons and with his self-loathing,
a literal battle
and it's an actual battle scene. Like he's in the audience brawling it out with all these different past versions of himself, and that's how the performance is portrayed, instead of like this, you know, transcendent culture breaking moment where this is what made Robbie Williams a star. It's all about the actual experience that he was having on the inside, where he's going, at the highest moments of my career, I was more terrified and alone and insecure, you know, than.
Yeah. And this whole scene before this, I mean, he's had this relationship with his dad. Right. And he is what he wants, his father's approval, or he wants a relationship with his father. Right. And his father's not really giving it to him because his father seems to love celebrity more than he loves his own son. So they have the exchange before the concert where Robbie actually lashes out at his dad finally and says, like, you were never there for me. Right. Mm-hmm. He's drunk on a lake and he yells at his dad. His dad actually comes to get him, like he's walking in the water. And then they have that exchange. Right. And so this whole Nebworth thing, this whole concert was really, that's what Robbie thought was going to get his dad's approval.
Right.
That's what he thought was going to bring his dad to him, and they were going to repair their relationship. So we're all kind of like thinking that that's what it's going to be. So it is, you know, that's essentially in another movie, that's what you would probably set up. And then you'd have them make up before the show, and then they'd have the show and everything would be good. But in this one, it's different. He has a fight with his dad before it. And then that's when he has his lowest point. So that really, I feel like that was the end of Act Two, which is where you should really be at your lowest point. You should really be where you can't, you know, everything is kind of all is lost moment. Right.
And by the way, we should mention too, through a sizable chunk of this movie, Robbie Williams is in deep drug addiction.
Like, oh yeah, for the vast majority.
For the vast majority of the film, he is just railing lines of cocaine. At one point, he even gets into heroin. There's a really lovely visual in a scene where he's doing heroin in the bathroom and the tiles turn into the black goo.
Yeah,
I just,
crazy.
There's some really great visual flares in this film that I thought I thought it was a very well directed, and like the cinematography is really, really good.
The choreography of all the dances and all just everything. It was really entertaining.
But yeah, it's like, I think a lot of biopics that, you know, like the Ray Charles movie or Walk the Line, like they show the addiction, but the addiction seems to have its own little moment. It's like, it's got its own little act of the film, but then it's like everything before the addiction, then the addiction happens, there's a downfall, and then everything after the addiction. And that's usually the formula.
Yeah.
For pretty much from the moment he starts going on tour with Take That, he's addicted to cocaine and alcohol.
Yeah.
And he is all the way through to almost the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And so everything is like, in all of these major moments of his career, we can see him being incredibly self-destructive and incredibly reckless, where he'll be backstage at like a major moment and he'll be doing like too many drugs and you're going, oh geez, dude, you're going to blow it. You're going to blow it.
Yeah.
And he goes out and somehow pulls it off. It sort of reminded me of, did you ever see Judy, the Judy Garland movie with Renee Zellweger?
I never did. No,
there was something really impressive about that movie because Judy Garland was pretty addicted to barbiturates her entire life and benzos.
Right.
And there's something kind of amazing of like, they would show the amount of drugs and alcohol that she would consume before going on stage. And sometimes she'd like barely be able to stand up. And then somehow she would like pull herself together when she would get in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And there is sort of that element to Robbie Williams where when you know what he was actually going through and you look at his career in the 90s, it is kind of amazing that he was able to.
Yeah.
Still go out and perform when he was consuming as much as he was. And that's sort of impressive, but it's also just like terribly sad. And
it is.
You know,
it is. I mean, it is sad. Like, and the whole movie is, after that moment at Nebworth, that's when he really, you know, decides to check in. Is that really? I think that is.
I think so.
Rehab. And he, that's where he really gets his. And this is the thing about the climax of the movie. The climax of the movie is so much more intimate than most other biopics, right? Like it's, you know, he goes into rehab and he starts getting himself better. And he starts making up with the people that he hurt before, which is actually a really great scene where he gets back with his, you know, his former fiance and they have a good relationship. And then he gets back with his friend and all of that. But then the climax is just him singing a song and him having this moment with his dad where he comes up on stage and they sing together.
Yeah. Like,
which is a great, and it's not even his song.
Yeah.
It's Frank Sinatra, you know,
it's my way. Yeah.
Which is really, again, I'm like, wow, this is crazy that in the climax of the movie, he's not even singing his own song. He's singing somebody else's. It really wraps everything up, but it's not his, like it's someone else's.
That's what's really interesting. I've seen a lot of takes about this film from people who I don't actually think watched the movie about Robbie Williams' ego and how this movie is just a big ego trip for him and stuff.
Yeah.
And a big part of his public persona is his ego. I mean, like you talked about, he has a very famous album called The Ego Has Landed.
Yes.
And a big part of what made him appealing to fans is this kind of attitude of like, I'm the best in the world, I'm the hottest in the world, I'm the coolest in the world.
Yep.
But it was always sort of done in this cheeky wink wink way where he's like, I'm playing a character of a guy who is this like you know, cheeky like hot boy from England, but like really I'm a scared, insecure, terrified kid.
Yeah, he's playing Robbie, not Robert, right? He's that character. Yeah.
And I think I think he's always been kind of self-aware about that. And that's really what works for me about this film is there's a self-awareness. Like the movie's aware that obviously you have to have a massive ego to want to be a world famous pop star and to, you know, tell your teachers in school, like, I'm going to be famous and go audition for boy bands and think that it's like showing up and auditioning for American Idol and being like, I should be the next American Idol. Like, obviously there's some kind of self-aggrandizing thing going on. And I'm no stranger to this. Like, I'm a person who's a performer, and like, you've got to have a little bit of that, of thinking like, I'm worthy of being on the stage and being seen and being and getting the applause. And what I find really refreshing in Better Man is, sure, there's a lot of ego on display, but it's self-aware ego. It's a character who is aware of what a cocky, you know, loudmouth he is. I even love the last line of the movie that he kind of like, after this whole movie where he's been, we've seen his deep insecurity and his deep fear and anxiety on display, you know, manifest visually with him as this other character, this chimpanzee. The last line of the film is, he just says, you know what? I'm an entertainer, and I'm the best in the world at it. You can all go F yourselves. And that's the last line of the movie. And it's sort of, and it's sort of said with like a wink, wink, like it's sort of said in this cheeky way of like, I don't care what you guys think, I'm great at this.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's really cool to end the, and again, talking about ego, to end the film on someone else's song.
Yeah.
To say, yeah, I know you all think I'm a cocky little prick, but like, I actually am. I'm just a kid who got a lucky break, and like, this is the life I got stuck with, and I'm doing my best. And you know what? I'm good at it, and I've made a life doing it. And you know, and I'm doing. Yeah, and I that's what I got. And I thought that was so kind of cool and refreshing, because it actually feels like it's not about the ego. It's about a regular person who just goes, something crazy happened to me. And I have a crazy life story, and this is it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, it is more, I mean, he has an ego when he's playing this character, but he himself is not really that person. And I mean, I don't know how he is as an actual person, but I wouldn't say that this movie really services his ego, because it makes him look like a fool in many ways. And he admits it. Right. So yeah, it's definitely different, and it's pretty refreshing.
Yeah, it's like again, most biopics are about it's the story of why this person became successful, and usually the answer to that question is it's because they had an undeniable brilliance about them, an undeniable talent.
Right.
And Robbie Williams, the self-aware nature of the way that this story is told is, he seems to be telling us a story where he's like, look, I probably, by all rights, should not have become famous.
Right.
I barely made it by the skin of my teeth, and I just got a bunch of lucky breaks. Like, I met the right people at the right time who gave me the right opportunities. I don't know why. And even from like his there's a beautiful moment at the beginning of the movie where he's doing his first onstage performance in Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah.
And he's terrified to go on stage, and he's telling his friend, my dad's going to see me perform, and he's going to see right through me.
Yeah.
He's going to see that I'm a fraud. And he's terrified, and he goes on stage, and the first thing he does is he falls flat on his face, and everyone laughs, and he turns around terrified, and he thinks quick on his feet, and he just kind of says some cheeky thing like, how about an applause for my entrance?
Yeah.
And that characterizes who Robbie Williams is like a guy who kind of is tripping over himself and kind of stumbling and falling and failing, but he's good at looking at the audience and coming up with a quick line,
making it look like it was all part of his plan type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's so much more, that's so refreshing and human and relatable to see a guy who's like, the story of my success is not a story about a guy who was just so undeniably talented. There was no way I wasn't going to become. It's a story of like, hey, it's crazy that this happened to me, that I got this lucky and I never felt like I deserved it. My whole career, I didn't feel like I deserved it. Yeah. And part of him coming to accept himself is accepting that like, it's okay that this happened to me and I am good at what I do. And that's okay for me to think.
Yeah.
And
I want to ask you about let's talk about the dance numbers and the actual musicals of the movie. I mean, first of all, I loved that they made it an actual musical like we have talked about, because then it makes it more outlandish. It just kind of is more impressionistic than trying to be any sort of like reality. Right.
Yeah.
Obviously. And also he's a monkey, so there's no way that was true. But I was blown away, and I loved. So Michael Gracie directed this movie, and he is really good at making scenes very entertaining.
Yeah.
I was very entertained by this movie. So he also, the only other big movie that he's done is Greatest Showman, which is also a very big movie. Mm-hmm. And I loved that movie as well because it was entertaining. The dancing was entertaining. It was, the songs were good. The story, obviously, you know, wasn't.
Yeah, great. I'm not a huge fan of Greatest Showman, but I get why people like it, and it is it's competently made, and it is entertaining.
Yes, and that, and I get that too. The story in that is not the best, but I overlook it because I love the entertainment of it.
Yeah,
And I can look past those things, but this this one for that movie, I can look past it. This one actually has a great story. And then it has the entertainment factor of it. So like, you know, pretty early on, once he gets into the boy band and they finally make it big, they do, you know, rock DJ.
Yeah.
And they have this big long oneer, which is, it's stitched together. It's obviously not one actual long take, but it looks like one long take. And it was so much fun to see all of this. This is like when you really, when the music and the visuals and the part of the story, they all come together and they all work out so well. And it was so much fun to watch this scene, how well it was choreographed by the dancing and also the camera work. Like, I was blown away by this scene. What were your thoughts on that one?
My theater erupted in applause at the end of this, at the end of the scene. My theater was full, and
that's great.
The entire theater erupted into applause at the end of this number.
Wow.
And I was going to the bathroom. Like, I got up to go to the bathroom and this number started, and I had seen a little like 30-second preview of this online, and I was like, oh wait, let me sit back down. I got to watch this number. And I sat back down and I was blown away by this thing. I will say that this is, for me as like a non-Robbie Williams music fan, this is one of the potential issues of like doing a Robbie Williams biopic, is his song catalog is pretty, there's not a whole lot of like big upbeat bangers in his catalog. His songs are actually quite subdued. A lot of his more famous songs are slower tempo and more ballady, which is surprising. People think of him as a big pop star, but he's only got like a handful of hits that are really up tempo, big energy songs. I think it's a big swing to put a song that's this big in the middle of the movie, because in many ways it feels like a standout highlight of the film. It's sort of like when Anne Hathaway does I Dreamed a Dream in Les Mis, and it's like at the 20-minute mark of the movie, and it's such a, it brings the house down, and the rest of the movie kind of has a hard time competing with the emotional impact of that.
Yeah,
I did feel that a little bit here.
I gotta
admit, I was so blown away by Rock DJ that I sort of was waiting for something else in the movie
to top come it.
And nothing else really did.
Yeah.
And so maybe I might like dock like a technical score for that or something.
Yeah, I can see that.
But
yeah.
it is a brilliantly executed musical number. Oh, and yeah. It's everything that I keep screaming about musicals on yes. film, which is yeah. just let me see it. Quit cutting so much. Quit cutting the camera so much. I feel the same way about action sequences and fight sequences. Yeah. I feel like get it in a wide if you can. And this number is a perfect example and perfect proof of what I'm talking about. Of
yeah. Yeah.
The fact that they stay wide when they pull back, it's all in Piccadilly Circus in London. And at the end, when they pull back and there's like 500 people going all the way down the street dancing, yeah. it's so amazing.
Yeah.
And luckily they don't end the number by zooming in on one character's face. This is something that I've seen again and again in big Hollywood musicals lately.
Yeah.
Is they'll do a big ensemble dance number, and then at the very end, as the music crescendos, they'll zoom in on the main character's face instead right. of pulling right. out to show the whole ensemble. And I think it's the exact wrong move every single time. I'm like, no, right. we're here for the big picture.
Right.
This yeah, is yeah, what yeah. musicals are. Yeah. And I can't thank Michael Gacy enough for showing me the full
yeah.
picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I mean, they do, this has got it. This was a hard, I mean, they go in and out of buildings mm-hmm. and into the street, like you talked about. And then the song actually, you know, he says, I don't want to stop. And then yeah. everybody stops for a second. And then the music comes back in and they all, so it was, everything was choreographed and timed so well. It was never topped as far as entertainment levels by that song. No other song in the movie was yeah. as entertaining as that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did. Angels is probably, like I said, is probably his most famous song, at least in America. And I thought that one was really good. The rest of the songs were great because of the emotional impact that they have on him as a character or the story as a whole.
And I think Rock DJ is the number that sells you on the movie. If you're yes. not sold already,
yeah.
that's the number that goes like relax and just, and then you stay emotionally engaged with the rest yes. of the story. At least I did.
I totally agree. Yeah. And then the next one that I really liked was Come Undone. So this is really the midpoint of the movie. He gets kicked out of the band, the boy band, or he leaves. They ask him to leave, and he pretty much leaves. And then he's driving down this big long.
This was such an impressive sequence.
Oh, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So he's driving down this driveway, and there's people at the gate, and he's telling him to get out of the way, but he's singing while he does it, right? And he, as he's driving, he's pretty much doesn't care if he dies or not, right?
He's driving intoxicated, he's driving recklessly,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of given up, like whatever. And you think he's gonna get hit by a car. He closes his eyes, you think, and then he all of a sudden wakes up and he's like underwater, right?
Well, the transition's amazing because he's going head to head with a bus.
Yes.
And right yeah, yeah, as yeah. they hit, the car slams through a wall of water. And that, like he
yes.
And then like it's this amazing effect where you're not sure what's like if he actually did get in a car accident, right. He was in like a coma or something.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that's done visually that is really yeah. impressive. And
right.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, he's, and that's what I thought too. Like, did this, okay, he's not dead. Like my wife was like, she's like, did he die? And I was like, no, he's still alive. He's narrating the movie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like,
he's like, and that's when I died. And yeah, then the movie just rolls credits.
And obviously she didn't know, which I told her after. Yeah. And it was, it's perfectly understandable why she would think that. But you think like, I thought, oh, he must have gotten a car accident and he's just in a coma, like you said. But no, he's underwater. It does yeah. that whole thing. And then he's underwater. And then he's under ice and he sees all his friends and he can't get through to him. And then you have all these photographers coming up in the water.
Like, yeah.
just coming around him almost like, you know, just a bunch of fish or yeah. sharks coming at, you know, their prey or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're taking photos of him and he's trying to get away from him. So this whole impression, you know, this impressionistic scene, this was like a really, I thought this was a very brilliant part of the movie because it really just gave you the aspect of how he was feeling at that time.
I just really, really respect the big swing nature of the visual style.
Yeah.
Of the
film. Yeah.
That they go, it's got so much big visual storytelling that really works and that really, like, things on the big screen, which is why I think it's a shame that this movie's not doing better in the box office.
Yeah.
And yeah, the musical element really, really works. I think Rock DJ is better than any musical number I've seen in any modern movie musical in maybe the last 15 years. Like, it is, I thought it was better than any musical number in Wicked, almost, in the way that it was executed ensemble wise. Like, Loathing. What is this feeling in Wicked is like their big ensemble number, or Dancing Through Life. Those numbers have great elements to them. One of my big problems is we're cutting too much. We're constantly cutting between things, and it gets to be a little too much. And we end both numbers by zooming in on the main characters' faces instead of showing the full ensemble. Yeah, I feel like this movie executes its musical numbers so well. The musical number when he first meets his fiance and they're dancing on the boat was so well executed. And
yeah, that was the next one that I loved.
Yeah.
That was real. And then, man, this one, I mean, first of all, okay, I bawled throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Like, me and my wife were both. Yeah. I mean, just, it was the emotional impact of it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, when he loses his grandma, who is extremely important to him, who always showed him that love. And that's when Angel comes on, which is really nice. But then when he meets his wife, or I'm sorry, it's not his wife, his fiance, they have this really great moment. You know, they meet each other and then they just start dancing. And then we get the whole picture of their relationship. Right. And then, like, they have a relationship. They get together. He proposes to her. She gets pregnant. And then, you know, for her career, you know, her label or her manager, whoever, makes her have an abortion.
Yeah.
And it's just like they put the crib up and then they have to take it down.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh my gosh, like, this was the way that they did it around the song, which the song that he has is She's the One. I love that song, and it the way that feels like their relationship, right?
Well, and that's what's so cool about a musical is you can do a movie musical, especially, you can do that. You can do a lot of storytelling in the course of one song, and they do that several times in this movie really well, where they'll sort of make a musical number into a montage that shows you a lot of the life, and it doesn't feel just, because a lot of biopics have montages because they're trying to cover a lot of story in the span of like a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
But in this, it doesn't feel, it just feels fresh. It just feels like it's being done in a way that we haven't seen before. And it's being done with such a visual mastery that I think.
And it stays in one moment. They're meeting and they dance. And, you know, the choreography on that was really, it was really good. And I asked my wife, like, is this dancer good? Because she seems like she's really good. She's like, oh, yeah, she was really good. And it was a really well done scene. And it did, like, it pretty much ends with them meeting. But then we've just had this experience with them. And then you get to go into their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and that also has ramifications down the line of why they broke up, because he felt like their family, you know, could have been. Anyway, it was really well done. It was a really great scene. And
there's one other thing I want to talk about before we get into our scores. Okay. And that is the nature of the lead performance. Now, this is another element to this biopic that is very unique that I can't believe we haven't even talked about yet, is Robbie Williams voices himself. Now, what I did think was, when I was watching the film, I assumed he was also doing the motion capture acting and that he was wearing a suit. They had a separate actor who did the motion capture. So they had an actor doing the physical performance of Robbie Williams, and then Robbie Williams, the actual person, was the voice of the character, which I thought was
he? I thought it was actually the actor doing the voice and the acting, and then Robbie would do the singing.
Okay, because
in
the credits, he was credited at, it said Robbie Williams himself, you know, like it, like,
okay,
it
so was, Well, yeah, it says as himself. So narrator and vocal. This is on Wikipedia. So
okay, so he was the narrator and the vocal and the vocals. Of the singing.
Yeah, and then John O'Davies is voice and motion capture. So he was doing the acting and all the voice, because it definitely didn't sound like Robbie Williams.
So that's a really interesting aspect to this movie. Yeah. That like the actual guy is in the movie to a certain extent. Like he actually came and was part of the performance. And I thought when I saw him playing himself in the credits that I was like, oh, did he do the whole thing? Like, did he play him? Right. And if so, I was like, oh wow, he's a good actor. Like he was doing a really good job. But then I saw that a different guy did it. So then I was confused, because I was like, okay, so did they have like an actor do the physicality, and then Robbie Williams so he was just the narrator and the singing vocals.
Yeah. So that's Robbie Williams. And then the actor, John O'Davies, he did a good job. It is interesting though. Like he's in a movie and I don't know what he looks like.
Right.
I mean, like I do now, but like it's a lot like Planet of the Apes. Whoever the main character is, you have to be okay with not being seen as the performer in that sense. Right. In the physical sense.
So when I went and saw this in LA, like I said, my theater was full, and there was clearly a big crowd of people who had worked on the film. Like they were,
oh, okay. Nice.
They were like I can always tell when there's like a group that like someone worked in the costume department or something,
right,
you know?
Right. Right.
But after the film, they were all like standing in and cheering, and they were cheering when names were coming up. They were like, yeah, go Susan, you know, like stuff like that. And so I could tell that they worked on the film. And then as they walked by me, I saw this guy that everyone was kind of surrounding and being like, dude, that was so good. And him being like, thank you.
Yeah.
And people saying that to him. And I was like, I don't recognize that guy. I was like, maybe he worked in one of the departments. And then when I went and watched some behind the scenes featurettes and I saw what John O'Davies looked like, I was like, I think that's who I saw.
Oh, no
way.
And
I think he might have been at my showing in Los Angeles.
No way.
But there's no way I would have known that, because that is crazy to be playing the lead character in this big movie. And I genuinely thought that Robbie Williams was doing most of it. Mm-hmm. I thought that, and I think that that's an interesting element to this film, that he's at least his voice is present throughout the entire thing. He's doing this narration, and he does a great job with the narration. You know,
he does. Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, he knows how to play and do that narration. But and then also John O'Davies did a really great job. It was interesting though. The whole thing is it's a very unique idea.
Yeah, very similar to the Planet of the Apes movies. There's some really fantastic motion capture performance work going on where, you know, because of the actor who's giving the motion capture performance, the animation is like incredibly lifelike at certain moments and has really lifelike emotions and really you can really like detailed, subtle emotions on their face. And I always kind of marvel at that kind of stuff. Is there anything else you want to cover before we get into scores?
No, I think there's one other thing I'll talk about, but we can get to it in scores. So,
okay, cool. It's time for us to score better, man. We give scores for technical achievement, which is just everything from the script to the musical score, to special effects, to cinematography, acting, all that stuff. We give scores for ending. How well did they stick the landing of the film? For rewatchability, for cultural relevance, and for our subjective feelings on the film. What'd you give Better Man as a technical score?
I gave it a 9. I thought, I mean, like we talked about, the movie is structured extremely well.
Yeah.
And then the visual effects are done extremely well. Mm-hmm. And then the choreography and the dancing and the musical numbers, overall, it's really, really well done. So I thought it was pretty amazing. So I gave it a 9.
I agree. I'm at a 9 as well. I think it's technically a very well-constructed film. It's a very technically impressive film. I wonder if there's something about people just not being that into CGI monkeys, because even all of they keep making these Planet of the Apes movies because they do well enough to keep having new ones made, but they're still like it, for my money, a pretty underviewed series of films, the new Planet of the Apes movies. And I'm always telling people about them and people are like, oh, I've never seen those. And it's like, they're fantastic. They're so good.
Really good.
So I don't, and they're all technically amazing movies. So I don't know if people just have a weird thing about, like, I don't want to watch a movie about a CGI monkey, but
I think you're right. So, yeah. But give it a chance. It's great.
Yeah. This movie is very, very technically well made. Yes. How did you feel they stuck the landing with the ending?
So the ending, I gave an 8. And the reason for that is because the story with the dad, it was good, but I felt like it was a little unsatisfying. Like, I don't know if the dad really got the lesson, or really, like, he kind of does, but I feel like they could have tweaked that a little bit to make it a little bit more impactful. But honestly, like, it really was great. Like the moment when he's singing, it was really a great payoff for him and a great payoff for all of his characters. But then the father is the one that I just docked a little bit, because I wish he kind of would have gotten it a little bit more, or had a little bit different reaction. Right. But it's kind of a nitpick for that. So I just gave it an 8.
I'm at the exact same place, 8. Nice. And it's similar reasons. I think that the dad gets let off the hook a little bit in the story, and maybe there's pages that have been cut from the final edit that we didn't see something or other about. Cause I know from recovery that, like, forgiving people isn't necessarily about saying that what they did was okay. And I don't think that the story's necessarily saying that what Robbie's dad did is okay.
Right.
I think it's more just like, for Robbie's own health, he's chosen to not only accept himself, but accept his father for who he is and all of his flaws, that his dad is a flawed guy and he's accepted him. For me, also, the ending, I think that if this movie does have one big technical flaw, it's that it's a hair too long. It's a little, long. And I felt myself by the end of the film kind of going, okay, I think it's time to start wrapping things up.
Right.
And the ending, while I think it's really nice, and I think it finishes the story out really nicely, I like that it's a smaller, more intimate ending, but it feels a little anticlimactic, and definitely, like we talked about, nothing ever quite reaches the heights of Rock DJ. And so by the end of the film, you're a little bit like, oh man, I never really got something as cool as that scene I got at the 30 minute mark. But it's not that the ending's bad. Just dock the point for that.
I think it is very satisfying emotionally.
Yeah.
But for the entertainment, it could have been there. But again, like, it finishes off the character in a very perfect way.
Yeah. So, how about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave an 8. I mean, I really want to watch a lot of the numbers again. I mean, it is a little long, so. But it's definitely a movie that you could watch a lot, because it is a fun movie. It's an entertaining movie. It keeps you engaged the whole time. I read this review that, like, there's not a minute that goes by that you're not affected, you're not entertained or emotionally charged, or I can't remember what it all said, but basically every minute of this movie you're either laughing, crying, or being entertained. And so it was a really good one.
I agree. And I'm 8 as well. I immediately after seeing this movie was like, I want to see that again. I want to go back and see it again. And I'm not even a person who was raised as a fan of Robbie Williams. I just was so shocked at how much I liked the movie. I can only imagine that fans of his music will want to watch it again even more. How did you feel about the cultural impact of this film?
I don't know how. It's really not doing much. So I put it at a 4. Because I don't know, maybe it should be lower because it's not really doing anything, but that's what I gave it.
Do you think there's a chance that this movie has a bigger life later on?
I do. I mean, it has. So I just checked Rotten Tomatoes, and it's, let me see if I can.
It's an incredibly well-reviewed film.
It is. It's like, it's 89% with critics and 90 or 91 or 92% with audiences.
Yeah.
And so everybody's liking it who's seeing it. And I think it's well-deserved, both of those scores. So I think it will have a cult following and people will latch on to it, but it's going to take a long time. I just think.
It's kind of crazy that everyone thinks the big crime in the musical or comedy section is that Emilia Perez won over Wicked. I think it's crazy that Better Man wasn't even looked at. Better Man's, I think that's crazy.
I agree. Guys, this is pretty awesome movie.
It's a pretty darn good movie musical. And the fact that it's not even being looked at in these, you know, for anything.
Yeah.
That, like, at the, if it's not going to get a nomination for, like, special effects or, you know, production design or, you know, I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah. And what did you give it for cultural impact?
I gave it a 7 because I'm interested long term. I feel like this is a movie that people are going to continue to find it and continue to talk about it. And especially as more and more biopics keep coming out and people keep kind of going, ah, oh, geez, why are they all so similar? Why are they all so formulaic? Yeah. More and more people are going to go, if you want a biopic that breaks with the formula and that offers something different, you should check out Better Man.
Yeah.
And fans of movie musicals, I think, will continue to find it. I could see this having a big life wherever it winds up on streaming. When people check it out at home and go, actually, that was really good. I might be wrong. So maybe I should knock that down to like a 6, but
I mean, I'm looking at it more like how it is right now.
Yeah.
And you seem to be looking more to the future, which I think is great. I hope it does get to that point.
Yeah.
Because I want people to see this movie. So,
yeah. And your subjective score.
Yes. My subjective score is a 9. I love it. It was awesome.
Yeah. Mine is an 8. Great. Couldn't even tell you why it's an 8 and not a 9. I really, really liked this movie a lot. I think that I was a little bit like waiting for something to be as cool as Rock DJ, and was a little bit, I feel like the movie lost a little bit of steam in its second half for me, but not terribly. I still really, really enjoyed this movie. So maybe like an 8.5, you know?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very, very, very good scores.
Yeah. If Better Man is in theaters where you are, I would go see it, you know, when we are not being paid by Paramount to say this. I wish we were.
Yeah. I wish we were too.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
But I'd go check it out. I think it's worth seeing on the big screen. I might go see it again before it leaves theaters.
And it's a fun theater experience. Go see it. Really, you'll be surprised.
Yeah, if you've seen Better Man, let us know what you thought in the comments. Let us know if you'll reconsider in the comments. And you know, as always, like, subscribe, share, all those things. We're building our channel. We're up over like 135 or something subscribers on our new channel. Yeah. Gotta celebrate the little victories.
Yeah.
Hopefully in a couple weeks we can get that to like 200 or 300. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, thanks to everybody who's followed so far.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we will see you on the next one.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.